the challenging social, political, and economic environment of South Africa, business and nonprofits must be agile and adaptable in order to thrive. My guest today has learned to be both. Valuable lessons from success and struggle in part two of a special double episode of YPO 10-Minute Tips from the Top. I'm Kevin Daum, and each week I bring you insights from the world's top executives of YPO, all made possible with grants from Gazelle's Growth Institute, growthinstitute.com. YPO member Mark Lubner evangelizes the good that business can do. It's what lifted his grandfather from being a desperately poor immigrant to achieving local success. Today, the Lubner family now runs Belron, a South African-based vehicle glass company which operates worldwide. With an MBA from Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Business, Mark ran the Mbono Investment Corporation, creating some of the first black empowerment deals in South Africa post-apartheid. Today, Mark leverages his business experience to grow two important charities, Africa Tikkun, which empowers African youth, and the Smile Foundation, which brings doctors to fix cleft palates and other facial disorders on children. In 2017, Mark was given the Top NGO Conscious Companies Award for his work with these charities. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much.
So Africa Tikkun is your flagship NGO that focuses on child and development. Tell us specifically what Africa Tikkun is doing here in South Africa.
Just to put a context quickly to the background, as the family was maturing, as it were, within the business context, so we started to bring in more professional management. We freed up time to be able to engage actively in the running and administration of a number of NGOs. I started an organization called the Smile Foundation, in fact, with the Honorable Nelson Mandela. He had made a commitment to a particular family that he would help their daughter to receive surgery. A young Tando Malumba Manyati suffered from a facial deformity, a facial paralysis condition called Moebius syndrome. I determined that there was insufficient skill in the country to be able to perform this surgery. And through the YPO network, I was able to access some of the world's leading surgeons. And using the Mandela name and brand and influence, I was able to bring this team to South Africa. And whilst the team were here, I recognized the opportunity to spread their skill to a local surgical fraternity such that the country would possess the skill. What was unusual was that we brought the skill into a state hospital environment rather than into the private sector. Today, Smile Foundation has moved away from simply just focusing on the disabilities in the kids and getting those kids operated on into a much, much broader context. We today partner with 10 hospitals around the country, and we could call the process of engagement starting with diagnosis, prognosis, working with the families to make the experience for them, A, understandable, because very often what you have is an English-speaking surgeon who's giving a prognosis to a non-English-speaking black patient. So the kids that we deal with typically all come from families that are disadvantaged and don't have private healthcare cover.
And it's not even just the physical aspects. From what I understand in the townships, there's a stigma that goes to handicapped people and a difficulty. I mean, they hide them, right?
There's a huge problem, quite frankly, with social stigma. It's an interesting phenomenon. When communities don't have a solution, what typically we tend to do is to isolate, extricate, and in fact socially ostracize because we haven't got an answer.
It's not just the side of society looking in a negative way at those people. There's a protective aspect from the family aspect. That's why they pull them back, right?
Well, there are two elements. One is when there's no explanation, then myths abound. So you will hear in some of the rural areas that a woman, for argument's sake, gives birth to a child with a cleft lip and palate, necessarily did something wrong during a pregnancy. She slept maybe with a man that she wasn't supposed to sleep with, or was touched, in fact, by the devil. And therefore, effectively, these children who are born with these ailments, in fact, become, and this is rather chronic, but sought after for body parts because of witchcraft and stuff of that sort of nature. And yet, within these communities, there is what's well known throughout Africa as a concept called Ubuntu. And Ubuntu means that we're only as strong as the weakest link within our community. So when communities have a solution, when we've gone in a Smile Foundation and given communities an answer, invariably we find that the community, in ever broadening terms, necessarily cooperate, coordinate together. and pool together to help that child reintegrate back into society. So SMILE starts off with the psychosocial support infrastructure, brings then the medical supports, helps kids post-surgically. At the same time, we focus very aggressively on helping to build up the competencies within the state hospitals. So we do a lot of skills training from nurses to surgical teams and surgical staff. And again, going back also to working in sync with local communities, we don't simply go in as an interventionist. We're not just a group of white guys going into a black environment to sort of provide solutions. What we typically do is we work very closely within the community. We share with the community what our efforts are necessarily all about and why we're doing it. We recognize that we're guests in that environment, no matter the good that we necessarily do or the funding that we necessarily provide. We really are a small cog that helps turn much bigger cogs in the wheel. And that mindset, I think, is a perhaps more enlightened approach to philanthropy than simply saying, let's go out and raise a bunch of money and let's sort of commit ourselves to doing good deeds.
The money itself doesn't necessarily do any good if there's not the infrastructure to deliver. And South Africa has been dealing with difficulties in developing consistent infrastructure at this point. So how are you managing through what is a relatively volatile political and infrastructure environment?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question. And I think I'd like to differentiate between that which appears in the national press when one looks at sort of South African infrastructure from a macro perspective. We are certainly, you know, facing some enormous challenges. When we get down to the micro level and we start to work hospital by hospital or community by community, you'll see that there are some wonderful examples which effectively defy the current thinking about what's going on in the country. We are finding at a regional and local level, there is a receptivity to work in partnerships. I think that there's an acceptance and a mindset that says that partnering with NGO world is not necessarily negative to the government, but rather, in fact, supportive of the government. Because we look at how do we integrate our energies and our efforts together for the common good of other South Africans, rather than necessarily supporting one political party or another.
I know you have strong feelings in regards to the aspect of individual enlightenment as it relates to philanthropy. Can you expand on that a bit?
I've come up internally within our organizations with that term entitled responsible kindness. And what I mean by responsible kindness is that when we're being kind to others, we have a responsibility to ensure that we don't create further dependency. It goes to a sense of mindfulness, asking ourselves the question all the time, not just inception of an organization, why do we do what we do? And if we can get uniformity and agreement throughout the organizations as to why we're doing what we're doing, A, we become a lot less ego-driven. You know, when you give, you feel empowered. So to avoid a lot of that and to truly stay focused on what is really genuinely the best interests of the parties that we're serving, you actually have to engage with those parties. You have to get a sense from them as to what necessarily they feel equally is important for their own development and growth. You can't make the assumption that you know. Secondly, the model that we engage globally, this concept that corporates will give huge sums of money into a pot and you make an application as a non-for-profit for that money so that you can spend it on a third party, that model is fundamentally flawed. And the solution to me lies in pushing egos again away and bringing the various key stakeholders around the table together. So Gates Foundation, for argument's sake, you guys have got money. You're wanting to spend it in a particular direction. Well, then you have to engage not only the NGOs, but the communities themselves are going to benefit and structure long-term game plans where everybody understands the roles that they're necessarily bringing. And he who provides the funding and the finance should not be seen as king, but rather just one of the key stakeholders, such that the NGO no longer has to necessarily be as apologetic as typically most charities are, or as coy in asking for money. No, we as in the NGO sector are performing a key critical role in society that helps those who've got money effectively enjoy the benefits of that money and create opportunities, stable environments. Money's just the ammo that's needed. It's the fuel that's needed to help achieve a lot of results. However, the money needs to be spent in a responsibly kind manner. The NGO world in itself also has to relook at itself. from a more mindful perspective, we have to ask ourselves, how much more could we do if we get the partnership models right? Partnerships, we all know, are very difficult. Marriage is difficult. But look at the benefits when a marriage works well. Look at the offspring that typically arise. It's much easier simply to stay single, quite honestly, if you really think it through. But the reality of it is that the beauty and the joy that comes together, the synergies that come together when individuals and organizations are able to collaborate, is much greater than simply just doing it on our own.
Mark, thank you for being on the show and sharing your wisdom today. I've learned so much from our conversation.
I'm very grateful. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us today, and thanks to Gazelle's Growth Institute for underwriting this program. Learn more at growthinstitute.com. Join me next week when I'll be interviewing YPO member Monica Bali, who will share what it's like to be a worldwide wedding planner to the stars. I'm Kevin Daum, and you're listening to YPO 10-Minute Tips from the Top. To learn more about YPO, please visit www.ypo.org.